From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. California and 15 other states are suing President Trump over his emergency declaration to build a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. Here's Attorney General Javier Becerra yesterday on KQED.
Now Donald Trump is trying to circumvent the constitutional prerogatives and protections that reside with the Congress, and he's trying to take billions of taxpayer dollars and misuse them.
We'll talk about what happens next with NPR's Domenico Montanaro. And then later in the hour, Oakland teachers are set to strike on Thursday, calling for higher pay and smaller classes. Can anything get the two sides back to the bargaining table? We'll get the latest from Oakland. That's coming up next after the news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning. And in this opening hour of Forum, demonstrators gathered in San Francisco and other Bay Area cities yesterday to protest President Trump's signing of an emergency declaration to build a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. Meanwhile, California and at least a dozen other states, 15 actually, are suing to block that move. And the administration is pledging to fight. Here's Trump advisor Stephen Miller on Fox News yesterday.
This is a threat in our country, not overseas, not in Belarus, not in Zimbabwe, not in Afghanistan or Syria or Iraq, but right here. And if the president can't defend this country, then he cannot fulfill his constitutional oath of office.
In this segment, we talk about the emergency declaration and other news out of Washington, including Senator Bernie Sanders' announcement that he's entering the 2020 presidential race, and former FBI Acting Director Andrew McCabe's remarks this weekend that the agency had reasonable cause to investigate President Trump's ties with the Russian government. Joining us is Domenico Montanaro, lead political editor for NPR. Domenico, good to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's begin by talking about 16 lawsuits that are going on right now from states throughout the country. And by the way, there were protests, I believe, throughout the country yesterday, not only here in the San Francisco Bay Area. This is really based on the idea that the president was trying an end run with this declaration around appropriations of Congress. But, of course, the president's saying, well, we've got emergency declarations before. And, in fact, there were a number of them before, but not quite like this one.
Not quite like this one. And we found also in our new NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll that's out that most Americans don't approve of this declaration. 61% said that they disapprove of Trump's declaration of an emergency to build a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. And nearly 6 in 10 also don't believe there is an emergency at all and that they think the president is misusing his presidential authority. So very different than what the president is putting out there. Of course, the president was looking for a way out of, you know, what was the longest shutdown in U.S. history and not having the government shut down again Friday. And this was his way of being able to somewhat declare some kind of victory. But clearly he's not winning over people in the middle.
Well, he's also, to some extent, not having the Republicans behind him, at least some of the Republicans on the Hill, though Republicans in that poll you conducted, I guess they're still over about 60%. And certainly his base is behind him on this, even though he promised that the Mexicans would pay, of course.
Oh, unquestionably, Republican rank and file are behind him on this. This has been a very polarizing president, and we see that 85% of Republicans approve of what the president did on Friday. And in fact, 90% of Trump supporters believe that there is an emergency on the border, even though big numbers of Democrats and big numbers of independents don't see that either. But of course, that's been the story of the Trump presidency, right? Polarized electorate, an unprecedented move, and not many beyond his base like what he's done. Certainly, there was a referendum on this kind of politics of revving up the base in 2018, and it's going to be tested again next year as we have all these Democrats ramping up to run against him.
So this will probably, I mean, if we can look at the trajectory of this, there will be a district court soon, I imagine, putting forth an injunction. And at this point, it will probably move to the circuit court and then to the Supreme Court. That has been the way things have been moving in the past. Yeah.
we could probably play the clip of the president himself predicting which direction this would all go in, that sort of sing-songy voice that, you know, he's going to get a bad ruling in the Ninth Circuit and then another bad ruling and then maybe it'll go to the Supreme Court and then he hopes he'll get a, quote, fair shake at the Supreme Court. Of course, you know, he's been able to appoint two Supreme Court justices to the Supreme Court and has tipped the balance of that court from what had been majority, you know, if not moderate to center-left, left and now a much more conservative-leaning court, with the new swing vote, of course, being Justice John Roberts, who really is a conservative, but he's also an institutionalist. You know, the joke on Saturday Night Live was that Brett Kavanaugh would forget his phone and say, you know, who dis? But that's not exactly what's likely to happen. Brett Kavanaugh is somebody who has an expansive view of presidential power. That's something that a lot of people didn't talk about in the run-up to, or pay much attention to in the run-up to his confirmation hearing.
Yeah, speaking of Saturday Night Live, I want to get to President Trump's talking about treasonous activity from Andrew McCabe and perhaps also from Alec Baldwin on Saturday Night Live. But before we go there, and also talking even about censorship, there is also a resolution to defeat the president's call for national emergency. And that's probably going to also go through Congress. But the likelihood is that he would veto it. And again, we can almost predict that, can't we?
Yeah, probably. And whether or not it'll come to the floor is another question as well, because, you know, Mitch McConnell said that he supports the president in doing this, mostly because Mitch McConnell supports this issue being off the table, the issue of a shutdown. Mitch McConnell doesn't very much care for shutdowns. He doesn't think that that either party comes out doing very well politically and that not much gets done. So he's, you know, has made some, you know, compromise with himself on this as to, you know, not want to pick a fight with the president, but also not want to have the government shut down. So whether or not it'll even come to the floor is an open question. But there is a lot of grumbling from Republicans we talked to behind the scenes who think that this opens up a Pandora's box for allowing a potential Democratic president, when and if there is a Democratic president at some point in the future, to declare a national emergency or reallocate funding for any number of things, whether it's climate change or gun violence. And they were, you know, very much against President Obama using executive action on immigration. Of course, not the same thing. It was more of an issue of enforcement, where President Obama said not to enforce certain areas, as opposed to what the president is doing here in probably moving some funds around from the military to try to build his wall.
Well, it would establish a precedent that many are concerned about, even some in the GOP, as you said. We're talking to Domenico Montanaro, lead political editor for NPR. And let's talk about what's been going on with Andrew McCabe with you, Domenico. I mean, there are lots of things that have been raised by his interview on 60 Minutes, but also we go back to the fact that essentially he has said before that there was concern about the president. In fact, there was a counterinsurgency investigation that the president may have been allied with Russia or may have been doing obstruction of justice, and talk about the 25th Amendment and talk also about Rob Rosenstein supposedly wanting to record the president. All of this, by the way, to some extent, really given at least, by Rob Rosenstein, some serious skepticism, saying, well, we were just kind of joking around. But there was a bipartisan committee, and they were on the same page, apparently, weren't they, for closing McCabe?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different things there. I mean, one, on the 25th Amendment, there were some discussions, it seems, about potentially using that or invoking that, where you'd have to have a majority of cabinet officers to say that the president should be removed from office. It doesn't seem like it was something that went very far or was very serious. But what McCabe also talked about was the president dismissing U.S. intelligence because Putin told him to do so. That really raised some red flags for McCabe and for others at the FBI. And that's part of what was a reason for opening an investigation into the president, whether or not he was himself, you know, a Russian agent or colluding with the Russians. And as he said on 60 Minutes, an investigation doesn't mean, you know, a conviction. He's just saying that they wanted to look into it because there were enough things that were said publicly and enough things that happened behind the scenes to give him some pause. And of course, he noted that he told a bipartisan group of lawmakers about his investigation that would be opening, the FBI inquiry on whether the president was being used as a Russian asset, essentially, and that no one objected. And that included Mitch McConnell in that meeting, Paul Ryan, who was then House Speaker. So, you know, obviously this is McCabe talking about all this in the context of him selling a book. But at the same time, you know, as somebody who has been in controversy and hot water with this president and felt he had enough reasons to, you know, potentially doubt the president's patriotism.
And has also been essentially called a liar by Inspector General, no?
Well, that's true as well.
Yeah.
He had lied. It
gets very complicated, especially since, as I said, Rosenstein is essentially saying this is not the narrative that he has put himself behind, or at least says is valid. So we're getting a lot of conflict here. But the president essentially said, yeah, this is an attempt of treason and coup d'etat and all the rest of it, at the same time that he was denouncing, as we said earlier, Alec Baldwin on Saturday Night Live. I'm just wondering where you think this is going to go now. Lindsey Graham has said he was stunned by all this and he will issue subpoenas.
Yeah, I mean, there could very well be. I mean, the coup d'etat, you know, talk was interesting as far as I just perked my ears up, because it's not exactly, you know, a coup like you would see in some other country where someone's taken out by military force and there's somebody who crosses lines. 25th Amendment exists and it's legal and exists for a reason. You know, if a president is impaired, essentially, that's when it could be invoked. It's not something that's been invoked, but it's not extra legal. So that's an interesting take from the White House to think that it would be an illegal coup if something like that were to take place. You know, they'd have to argue that in court. I'm not certain where this is going to go overall, because I think for the most part, Republicans are pretty much behind the president. They don't want to irritate him. They don't want to irritate his base. And there hasn't been a lot that's broken the base at all. I mean, even if you look at the numbers on the national emergency, none of this shows any kind of fracturing of the president's base whatsoever on this. It doesn't mean that he's you know, reaching out beyond that base, but the numbers look very similar to what you see in his approval rating. If you don't like the president, you don't like the national emergency. If you like the president overall, you probably will say that you like that he declared this national emergency.
We're talking with NPR's lead political editor, Domenico Montanaro, talking about national political news and review, and we will also touch on Bernie Sanders throwing his hat back in the ring, but we also want to have you have your say here and hear from you, particularly on these two stories that we just covered. If you have some thoughts about the national emergency, if you have some thoughts, for that matter, about anything that we'll be covering this hour that's in the news, in the political news, the Andrew McCabe allegations, not only on 60 Minutes, but in his book, let us hear from you. You can join us at our toll-free number. We invite you to do that now. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Please feel free to be part of the program now at 866-733-6786. We're going to be shifting after the half hour to the Oakland School, so if you have something that you'd like to say, now would be the time to call. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or, of course, you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or post any comments you might have or questions onto our Facebook page. Let me go back to Bernie Sanders with you, Domenico. Let me go back. You get that sometimes, don't you?
Domenico. I've gotten it my entire life, so it's fully used to it.
Yeah, but you shouldn't get it from me. So let's go talk about Bernie Sanders here. He's in the race again. This is earlier than he decided to get in the race when he was defeated by Hillary Clinton. And it's a huger field, and there are a lot of more progressives who are in the race as well. So it's a very different picture. And yet at this time, what's your sense of, Sanders as a viable candidate? A lot of people are saying, hey, he's 77 years old, you know, on and on. He's had his run. This is not necessarily propitious for him to be the likely candidate to beat Donald Trump. Your thoughts?
It's fascinating to me because he is the person who, more than anybody really, took his ideas and shaped what the Democrats are running on in 2020. And yet there is this idea that his momentum it basically stopped at November 7th, 2016, that he's no longer seen as the main potential person. Now, he's still going to be a top-tier candidate when you look at polling. It's basically him, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, who are seen as the top, as part of the top tier very early. A lot of that is name recognition. I wouldn't pay much attention to horse race polling this early in a primary with this many candidates. But the fact is, Bernie Sanders was seen as a fringe candidate. He was seen as a fringe senator. His ideas didn't really go very far within Congress. He campaigned on them. He fought for them. And he nearly caught Hillary Clinton in 2016. He didn't. Clinton certainly was able to fend him off. But it's a very different party now in 2020. And it looks a lot more like the ideas of Bernie Sanders. And yet, at the same time, you see that his base is somewhat fractured. When we're out on the campaign trail and we ask some of the activists who were firmly behind him in 2016 what they think of him now, they say they like him, but they're open to other candidates. You saw just in your listening area, Kamala Harris there get 20,000 people in Oakland. That's a huge number of people out to see her. And we're seeing massive crowds for Democratic candidates across the country, and not necessarily for those candidates, but because Democratic enthusiasm is that far up. And I think a lot of people are waiting and seeing who kind of emerges and who impresses them.
Well, Senator Sanders also has some baggage he didn't have before because of his last campaign with respect to race and gender.
Well, that is true. You know, and the fact of the matter is, you know, Senator Sanders is you know, not somebody who really spoke that strongly about some of those issues, and some of his supporters might take exception to some of that. But it was always a difficulty of his being able to try to appeal in the South to win over Black Democrats and Latino Democrats in the West. They were areas where just, you know, by data, they weren't as sold on his message as they were, say, Hillary Clinton. And he still has some work to do on that. And he hasn't been the most, fluid with some of those issues of race when he's been asked about it.
Well, a lot of African-Americans took exception to the fact that he seemed to give priority to the idea of class to race. I mean, aside right. from the fact that he had a very good record on civil rights, which, of course, so did Hillary Clinton. But let's get our callers on here. We go, Neil, first to you. You're on.
Thanks. On the issue of what I'll call the McCabe revelations, although a lot of this isn't a revelation, recently, if your guests could piece together what I hear as two threads of the story, one thread of them being the investigation approved by bipartisanship on whether Trump was an agent, and then the notion of invoking the 25th Amendment, which I think historically has been a competency issue, and whether these two overlap, and when the foreign agent was brought to the bipartisan group, whether it was, if we think he's an agent, then we move to the 25th Amendment, or is this a separate track of investigation? So I can elaborate that, but that's the gist of my question.
Well, that's a good question, Domenico.
Yeah, I don't think the 25th Amendment was something that he was using to sell to the senators or mention to them, or the reason why he opened an investigation into the president's background with Russia. I think that had more to do with how he heard the president talk about U.S. intelligence versus how he talked about President Putin. That certainly raised a lot of red flags for not just McCabe, but a lot of people within the intelligence community. Remember how often President Trump would talk about the deep state out to get him within the United States. That's a lot more of what led to McCabe suggesting that an investigation be opened.
But wasn't it also the firing of Comey that really
moved
things forward?
That had to do it. Right. I mean, the obstruction of justice, the idea that there was an obstruction of justice for this. And what was the point of it, right, in President Trump telling Lester Holt on NBC that Russia was in the back of his mind, Andrew McCabe telling 60 Minutes that the president wanted Rod Rosenstein to put in something about Russia in that memo he wrote recommending firing of Jim Comey, and Rosenstein refusing to do so. All of that. Why is the president talking about Russia so much? Why is he thinking about Russia? That's why they really wanted to investigate.
And why was he trying to get rid of sanctions on Russia? I mean, there were a lot of things sort of aggregate. Let me get Mark on next. So, Mark, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. This is sort of a reading tea leaves question. Most people I talk to, the chances of an impeachment resulting in a conviction in light of the makeup of the Senate is metaphysically zero if you talk to whoever you talk to. What do you think the strategy here is for the Democrats in over the next year and a half or 2 years in light of that fact, no matter what's in the Mueller report, right? What could possibly trigger a conviction in the Senate?
Oh, well, I'm not sure if anything can trigger a conviction in the Senate. I mean, sure, there could be something that triggers a conviction. But Democrats have been, strategically cautious and using a different I word, investigations. And that can drag out this process for quite some time to be able to say once a week, once every couple weeks, they bring people to the floor of the House, but to a hearing room in the House to investigate various ethics issues within the White House, Russia related, any ties, anything like that, that Democrats now have the gavel of oversight and are able to do that and maybe command some of the news cycle, because it's going to be very difficult, short of something extraordinary, to get Republicans to agree to impeach the president in the Senate.
Let me thank Mark for the call and remind you we're talking to Domenico Montanaro, who is lead political editor for NPR. And it's a provocative comment by one of our listeners, Domenico. Susan writes, "All my life I've heard and believed in the power of checks and balances to keep despots from damaging our country. I now know that this is nothing but a concept that now ceases to exist."
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, there are checks and balances, obviously, and I think that's part of why the president is so frustrated. You know, I think that, he would love to be able to go and, you know, do whatever he wants. Frankly, past presidents have joked about that. You know, George W. Bush joked, as did President Obama, that it'd be a whole lot easier to be a dictator. You could get done what you want to get done in a very easy way. But the president does have Congress to have to go through. Yes, he's declaring a national emergency and trying to build a wall that way. But there are still limitations to that, because regardless of what he uses the funds for or where they come from, they're not unlimited. You know, I mean, they come from the military, and there are going to be drawbacks potentially to taking money from troops or moving troops to the border to essentially function as border patrol agents. You know, all of that, certainly has potentially unintended consequences and are limiting than what could happen in a dictatorship.
I want to get a quick call on from Chris, who wants to talk about Bernie Sanders in the race. Chris, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, I just felt like I need to push back a little on the framing and presentation that you gave about Bernie Sanders in terms of his prospects. I was actually an elected Bernie delegate in 2016 and wrote several articles about him and his chances. And I think there's a real difference in how the media has presented, say, Kamala Harris's opening gambit for running. And suddenly there's this kind of unified trumpeting of her chances, momentum. And with Bernie, suddenly, even in your framing, there's just a sort of train of negative.
Let me cut to the chase here, Chris, because music's coming up and we have to go to the break here. But Domenico, what kind of chances does Bernie Sanders have, really? Significant?
Well, it's a lot. He's a top-tier candidate, unquestionably. He has a strong base. It's just that a lot of them seem to be peeling away and open to other candidates. Doesn't mean Bernie Sanders won't become the nominee, but it seems a little bit tougher as the front runner, or as a front runner.
Gotta leave it there. Thank you. Thanks to Domenico.